Go to secureboat.news. Get the facts. Sign the petition at secureboat.news. Secureboat.news.
Listen, and you'll know.
First of all, if you haven't heard this yet, I love this.
Rod Arquette on Talk Radio 105.9 KNRS.
Well, we know it didn't happen today, and it's not going to happen now because it's 6 o'clock on the East Coast, and nothing happens after about 5 or 6 o'clock on the East Coast as far as legal proceedings are concerned. But it could happen tomorrow, and there is a report that, in fact, it will happen tomorrow. And we're talking about the indictment against Donald J. Trump, former President of the United States. And then here in Park City, or up in Park City, we've got a trial going on involving an Academy Award actress and an accident or something, whatever, a collision, I should say, that happened on one of our local ski slopes. So there's a lot going on today. I mean, this is a very, very interesting day. You've got interesting cases here in the state of Utah. You've got the big one back in New York, of course, and what's going to happen with the Manhattan DA. As a matter of fact, if you don't know who Alvin Bragg is, we're going to fill you in coming up at the bottom of the hour. We're going to be talking to a reporter with the Washington Examiner. She's an investigative reporter who's been digging who Alvin Bragg is. Bragg is a Manhattan DA who is bound and determined to get Donald Trump in handcuffs, and it, in fact, could happen next week. Like I said, Daily Mail reporting today, an indictment most likely tomorrow, and then they'll work out the arrangements with the Secret Service that guard the president all the time and figure out a way to get him back from Florida up into New York, have him arraigned and fingerprinted and a mugshot. I mean, you just know that's what the Democrats, they just want a mugshot of Donald Trump, and they'll plaster it all over the place, and that's exactly what's going on. And then here you've got the case involving Gwyneth Paltrow. The argument's taking place. Now, they were in a recess. I just saw a tweet come across that they are back in session up in Park City. There are indications she will take the witness stand to defend herself against the ski slope collision. And we'll see if that happens today or if it stretches into tomorrow. We'll just have to wait and see. How are you, everybody? Hello, Utah. Welcome to the Rod Arquette Show. As I mentioned, a very busy Tuesday afternoon here on Utah's Talk Radio 105.9 KNRS. Listen, and you'll know, also coming up in the show today, who needs the mainstream media anymore? There are a lot of Republican candidates out there who feel they no longer need to go to the Alphabet Network, some of the other major newspapers in this country, to get their message across to the American people. So they're avoiding mainstream media. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. We'll talk about the president's veto yesterday of the ESG bill. We'll also talk about Elder Jeffrey Holland's speech or remarks, commencement remarks that he'll make at Southern Utah University. And a little bit later on, we'll talk about the expansion of that gravel pit in Draper. The mayor of Draper, Troy Walker, will join us, and we'll get his reaction to that. So like I said today, very, very busy show, and we invite you to be a part of the program. 888-570-8010, or on your cell phone, all you do is have to dial #250 and simply say, "Hey, Rod." All right, let's go to the Paltrow trial, first of all. The man who is bringing the case against Gwyneth Paltrow, his name is Dr. Terry Sanderson, and he is suing the actress over a February 26, 2016, quote, hit-and-run crash. And apparently his attorney today, in some opening remarks, claimed that Paltrow showed a conscious disregard for people that led her to run into the retired optometrist, leaving him with a traumatic brain injury. And his attorney today, for Sanderson's attorney, said her actions were callous. Now, distracted skiers cause crashes, and defendant Paltrow knew that looking up the mountain or to the side while skiing down a mountain was dangerous. That was what Sanderson's attorney, a man by the name of Lawrence Bueller, made in his opening remarks today. Now, Sanderson is accusing the actress, 50 years old, of causing him permanent brain damage after she allegedly plowed into him and fled at the Deer Valley Resort. The former Army optimist is seeking optometrist, I should say, is seeking $300,000 in damages from Paltrow. Now, Paltrow's attorney, of course, say a different story, that he ran into her and that she was looking out for people. So, and apparently there is a GoPro video of this somewhere, but nobody can seem to find it. And that's kind of interesting in all of this as well. So, like I said, this trial has been going on all morning. Opening remarks by both the defense and the prosecution in this case, so to speak, or the plaintiff, I should say. And then a lot of people are waiting for her to take the witness stand. It could happen today. As a matter of fact, they were in recess. Now we understand they are back in court, and we'll see what happens this afternoon. Of course, Abby is keeping her eye on this, and we'll follow this as well. Now, to Donald Trump. The Daily Mail is reporting this afternoon that Trump will likely be indicted tomorrow, but he won't appear before a judge until next week. According to the report today, he'll be formally charged, after which the Manhattan District Attorney's Office will reach out to Trump and his Secret Service detail to make arrangements for his surrender. He will fly to New York, sometime next week, where he will be arraigned, he'll be fingerprinted, and pose for a mugshot. I can't wait to see the mugshot. You just have to know Trump. He is eating this stuff up, man. I mean, he is eating this stuff up. And he is a fight in the campaigns, both campaigns, his time in the White House. Donald Trump doesn't back down, and he's not going to back down here. Matter of fact, his friends and sources close to him say he is looking forward to this because he believes he will be exonerated of the charges against him as a result of this hush money stuff. Meanwhile, New York police, Washington, D.C. police are preparing for possible unrest and demonstrations. They've already had demonstrators outside the courtroom there in New York, both pro and against Donald Trump. So we'll have to wait and see. But this is going to be interesting. As I said, Trump has declared that he is a victim of Stormy, and he calls her horseface, and her extortion, saying he's been targeted by a series of horrible radical left Democratic investigations. So we'll have to see what happens to now. Now, what about Donald Trump himself? I want to take you back. This was back last year, as a matter of fact. Jordan Peterson, who I know many of you know him. He's been here. He's spoken here, I think, a couple of occasions. Very popular book he wrote. Appeared on a show with Piers Morgan. This was back last fall. And Morgan asked Jordan Peterson, and he is a clinical psychologist yesterday and a public intellectual, to offer his professional assessment of Donald Trump's mental health. Now, this was late last fall, which some in America say he is narcissistic, sociopath, psychopath, or worse, what other views Trump as a victim. Listen to how Jordan Peterson described Donald Trump.
I don't think that he's a psychopath because he's been successful in repeated enterprises over long periods of time, and he has a variety of people who remain intensely loyal to him. It's very easy to demonize someone that you don't approve of, let's say, and certainly Trump has been subject, I would say, to more demonization than any political leader in the West that I can remember in my entire lifetime, including Richard Nixon. And so that's also set him back on his heels and made him somewhat embattled and defensive, which I don't think did any great things for his personality in some real sense.
Now, Peterson was also asked, and this was Piers Morgan. Now, remember, this was last fall. Piers Morgan asked him this question about the future for Donald Trump.
Would you like him to run again? Would it be good for America, do you think?
No, I don't think it would be good for America. Would it be good for him to run? That's a difficult question, because it might be that it would be good for America to have whether or not Donald Trump should be president sorted out in the public sphere, yeah, debated intensely, and subject to an election. So it might be very interesting to see him put himself forward on the Republican ticket. If I had my druthers, and I say this, I hope, with due care, I would rather see someone like DeSantis step forward, who shares some of that forthright strength, let's say, that characterizes Trump at his best, but seems to be a more cautious administrator and a less divisive figure. I think that would be better.
Jordan Peterson. He interviewed by Piers Morgan last November. As a matter of fact, what has all this news about Donald Trump done for his popularity? A new poll out today by the Morning Consult Group has him now with a double-digit lead over Ron DeSantis. Donald Trump remaining very popular among Republicans. All right, more coming up on the Rod Argent Show is Republicans, can they avoid the mainstream media? That's what they're attempting to do as we ramp up for the 2024 election. Coming up next right here on the Rod Argent Show and Utah's Talk Radio, 105.9 KNRS. Listen and you will know. Now, tomorrow the Fed meets. Are we going to get a decision on yet another increase in interest rates? A lot of people are speculating that the Fed right now feels that inflation is not under control, and they're going to do it again, raise interest rates to try and slow down this economy. Well, what does that mean for your investment portfolio? Strategic Wealth's investment team is aware of what the market and what's going on with the economy. They are constantly checking it each and every day, and they evaluate the markets for you to help you out. So why not get the professionals from Strategic Wealth on your team? Trajan Wealth has a fee-based model. There are no surprise charges for you, no commission salespeople, no limitations on the products they can offer. They focus on your specific situation. The Trajan Wealth team wants to meet with you to assess your evolving financial goals. So why not call Trajan Wealth today? They have offices in Draper and Farmington. Give them a call today, 801-899-7600 or online at TrajanWealth.com. Trajan Wealth, your local, trusted financial fiduciary to you.
Listen to meditative prayers on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rod Argent Show here on Utah's Talk Radio, 105.9 KNRS. Listen and you'll know. During yesterday's program, I had the two candidates on the show who are vying to be chairman of the Utah Republican Party since Carson Jorgensen is stepping down. And I asked them about what happened last year during the debates. And if you recall, the Utah Debate Commission had set up some debates dealing with the primary. And the Republican Party at that time felt, or Carson Jorgensen at that time, felt that they should have input on the topics that would be covered, not specifically the questions, but the topics and the moderators. And of course, the commission said no, and we didn't have a debate. They set up their own debates in that case. Well, I asked both candidates what they would do, and they said they agreed with what Carson Jorgensen did last year. Well, then I saw this article today in the Dispatch, written by, David Drucker, who we've had on this show numerous times over the years, writing about what Republican candidates may do leading up to the elections in 2024 and how they treat the mainstream media. And David is joining us on our Newsmaker line to talk about this right now. David, how are you? Welcome to the Rod Argent Show.
I'm great, Rod. Thanks for having me again.
What about conservatives and their approach to the mainstream media as we head into election season, David? What do you think is going on here?
Well, look, I just think, you know, the frustration that Republicans have with the media, some of it deserved, some of it warranted, some of it, you know, maybe a little complaining, but nonetheless, Republicans have longstanding gripes with, you know, whether you call it the legacy media, the corporate media, the mainstream media. And in recent years, the complaining has moved from accusations that the mainstream media is biased in favor of Democrats, unintentionally, but just because of shared worldview and shared values, mm-hmm. or just not enough, you know, life experience. You talk to a lot of Republicans and Republican operatives today, and they will just tell you they think the media is cheerleading for the Democrats openly and on purpose. That they're practically an arm of the Democratic Party. And so there are a lot of Republicans today that don't believe that the juice is worth the squeeze, that it's not worth talking to mainstream media outlets. Because number one, their voters don't watch or read those outlets. If they do, they don't believe anything that's in there. And, you know, if they pull off a good interview or if it's a good story, their voters don't read it. But if everything goes wrong, everybody sees it, everybody reads it. So the way they are approaching things this cycle is, I think, with a lot more trepidation, a lot more caution, and a lot of thinking that we have plenty of, you know, favorable outlets, sympathetic outlets that will just treat us fairly, that we don't need to talk to, you know, think of your favorite biggest legacy brand unless we have a specific purpose. We're trying to reach, let's say, wealthy donors that we know read those papers, or we're trying to reach a particular audience. So we'll see if this ends up coming to fruition. But I will say that in my, you know, conversations with Republican politicians and operatives, the way they describe their relationship with the media has changed over the past 20 years and is much more hostile now from their perspective, at least.
Are some of the candidates, do you think, or some Republicans picking up how Donald Trump treated the media? And are they saying, well, he got away with it? You know, he taught us how we should treat the media. Did they learn some lessons from Donald Trump?
Well, I think that's where some of them may be taking their cues, but I think that's misguided in this respect. Donald Trump loves the media, and he particularly loves to try and convince skeptical or skeptical reporters or reporters he considers hostile. He talks to maybe not quite as much as he used to, but I bet you he will. He has always been more accessible in a strange way than any other politician of any party I've ever covered. He talks to everybody all the time. And so I don't think that he's the right example, but I do think that what he has taught Republicans generally is that just because there's a bad story in the press, it doesn't have to ruin your day, let alone ruin your career. Just power through it, call it fake news, and move on. And that is definitely a change in how Republicans respond to the media, react to the media, that is different today than pre-Trump.
Mm-hmm. David, if this continues, let's say the GOP continues to cut off the established media in 2024 as we ramp up to the election, who's going to be hurt more by this, the candidates themselves or the media, who wouldn't be given access to them?
Well, listen, I think, look, as a reporter, I can always, you know, I like to think that I can always find a way to do my job, even if I don't get the kind of access that I want or think that I need. I will say that ultimately in a general election where you have to win over swing voters in key states, where you have to win over independents who are legitimately independent, there are not as many of these two groups as there used to be, but there are enough of them to matter, that if you only deal with, you know, so-called friendly media, or media that you just think is fair but is not the broader spectrum of media outlets, I think it's not that you can't win anyway, but I think it makes it harder. And I think, you know, I think a lot of voters, particularly soft partisans along with the indies and the swing voters, want to see you take tough, annoying questions from press, even if they think that it's unfair, because it tells them that you can handle the rigors of the presidency.
But unlike, let's say, 20 years ago, David, the candidates now certainly have many more avenues in which they can communicate to voters, right?
Yeah, they don't look, they don't, the thing is, whether they talk to me or not, whether they talk to legacy brands or not, they don't actually need me to reach voters. And that is something that's new. Even if Republicans thought the media was the greatest thing since sliced bread, to use a very old saying, they don't actually need us to reach voters in the way they used to. You've got social media platforms like Twitter and Facebook and a bunch that I'm not mentioning. You can set up your own YouTube channel. I've got candidates live streaming their campaign events. So I don't need to I don't need to wait until the next day to read the local paper or to see the local news at 11 o'clock to see a snippet of a rally. I can live stream it whenever I want. So candidates now can reach voters in ways that were not possible 20 years ago, 40 years ago, where the media was an essential conduit. That's just no longer the case. Again, even if they think that we're great and everything we're doing is great.
What about the staffs behind these candidates, David? Are they trying to establish a relationship with the media? Are they approaching it differently? Because, of course, they're behind the curtain working with these candidates. How about the staffs?
Yeah, the staff's really interesting. For younger staff that have really come of age professionally in the last 10 years or so, much less so. This is according to, veteran Republican operatives that I talked to about this, where, you know, for the Republican strategists that have been around for a long time, they don't want their candidates necessarily to talk to everybody, but they see value in trying to build coalitions beyond the base, and they think it can be useful to talk to media even when it's unfriendly or they think it's unfair or whatever they think about it. But if you're a young communications aide that has come of age in the last decade, particularly since Trump was president, and we have such bifurcated media now in ways we didn't years ago, they don't necessarily see the value of it, so they're not advising it. and they're not establishing relationships with reporters. Even sometimes reporters that they might get along with just fine, that may not have it out for their candidate, but they may just look at the masthead and say, we don't need these people. I'm not going to talk to them.
Interesting. David, as always, great chatting with you. Congratulations to your move over to the Dispatch. Thank you for your time.
Anytime. Thank you.
All right. Joining us on our Newsmaker line, that's David Drucker, senior writer at the Dispatch, talking about the mainstream media and how GOP candidates are treating it as we head into the 2024 election. All right, more coming up on the Rod Arkent Show in Utah's Talk Radio, 105.9 KNRS. Listen, and you'll know, you talk to almost anybody out there, and they will tell you that they believe the Internal Revenue Service is probably the most powerful government agency in the world today. That's why if you find yourself in trouble with the IRS, Jordan Wilcox is the tax attorney who can help you get a fresh start. The law offices of Jordan F. Wilcox, they recently helped a nurse in the Utah Valley settle a $65,000 IRS bill for much less than what the IRS said he owed. And they can help you as well. If you want to stop the harassing letters, stop living in fear, why not work with the law offices of Jordan Wilcox? They know the strategies and the protocol that are very, very important in dealing with the Internal Revenue Service. You want to find out more information? Here's all you have to do. Just dial #250 right now and say the keywords tax help UT. That's tax.
And superstars.
This is Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters.
And best of all, it doesn't cost a thing. Download the absolutely free iHeartRadio app now.
Put me on a highway, the interstate, a dirt road to any place, long as I'm
Rod Arkent Show on Talk Radio 105.9 KNRS.
All right, welcome back. Alvin Bragg is the prosecutor who is going after Donald Trump. Story out today that as district attorney, he has downgraded half of his felony cases to misdemeanors last year, in just his first year in office. So let me introduce you to Alvin Bragg, again, the prosecutor going after Donald Trump. Joining us on our Any Hour Newsmaker line to talk about that is Sarah Westwood. Sarah is an investigative reporter at the Washington Examiner. Sarah, thanks for joining us tonight on this. Sarah, you write today that Alvin Bragg, to a lot of people, is the national mascot for liberal law enforcement. How did he come about in earning that nickname?
Well, he is someone who, around the same time that Eric Adams won the mayor's race in New York City, came out immediately with this list of lower-level offenses that he was no longer going to prosecute to start. It changes to the way that his office, the Manhattan DA's office, is going to handle all kinds of different elements of the criminal justice system, including juveniles. And voters had just voted in a mayor who had won on a tough-on-crime platform mm-hmm. in a much more highly visible race. And so, naturally, Alvin Bragg received a major backlash from those same voters and had to walk that back within the first few weeks. But the statistics reflect a lot more leniency from his office and his predecessor. And then I think a lot of New York City voters bargained for. His office has secured 52% fewer sentences last year, for example, than in 2019, which was the last sort of normal year to judge against. And his office is downgrading so many more felonies to misdemeanors. So against this backdrop of rising crime and rising anxiety, Alvin Bragg has still pursued liberal criminal justice reform.
Has his approach to criminal justice also put him at odds even with some Democrats, Sarah?
That's right. I mean, Eric Adams, for one, mm-hmm. has sort of been openly critical of the way Alvin Bragg has run New York City's criminal justice system. He was a liability for Democratic Governor Kathy Hochul, who really struggled to defend her state's record on crime and in the state's most populous city to sort of sidestep the issue of Alvin Bragg. Lee Zeldin, who was the Republican nominee for governor of New York, by the way, made Alvin Bragg a focal point of his campaign because he's so deeply unpopular. So Alvin Bragg has really been out of step with his own party when it comes to criminal justice reform.
You've heard a number of Republicans over the last few days talk about his connection to George Soros. Exactly what is that connection?
Well, when Alvin Bragg was running for the DA's office in 2021, George Soros-backed Political Action Committee gave about $1 million to the effort to elect Alvin Bragg. And, you know, Soros has really made a lot of headlines over the past few years by pouring millions and millions of dollars into getting these very liberal prosecutors elected across the country. He's gotten dozens of them put in office. And that, you know, it preceded this wave of crime throughout the U.S. Now, obviously, there are a lot of factors that go into that. It's not just the fact that there are Soros-backed DAs in cities across the country, but certainly their approach to crime has coincided, their lenient approach to crime has coincided with factors that have led to this crime wave.
Sarah, how much heat did he take for his handling of the bodega shop incident in which someone working behind the counter defended himself and stabbed to death a man who leapt over the counter and attacked him? How much heat did he take for his handling of that case?
Oh, gosh, that's hard to overstate. It was a national story. It was all over cable news. You know, Fox News gave a bit of airtime to this story. Essentially, what happened is there was an elderly, small Hispanic bodega owner or worker who got into a tiff with a much larger, much younger man, an ex-convict, who jumped over the counter, shoved him against the wall, was attacking him. So this bodega worker stabbed him and killed him. And the attacker's girlfriend stabbed the bodega owner, but the only people who are held responsible for this attack was the man defending himself. The woman who also jumped over the counter and stabbed him, she didn't face any charges. There was a massive backlash to the fact that surveillance footage clearly showed an act of self-defense, but, you know, there were racial politics sort of involved in this incident. The fact that, you know, the victims, the attackers were black and the shop owner was not. So there was a lot of really deeply divisive politics involved in this, and under a lot of pressure, finally, after about a month, Bragg dropped the charges against the bodega worker, but not before it had become a real mess that really hurt his public image.
We're talking right now with Sarah Westwood. She's an investigative reporter at the Washington Examiner. Let's dig into this ongoing feud, apparently, or ongoing battle between him and the Trump family. What has exactly been going on with Alvin Bragg and Donald Trump and his family?
Well, Alvin Bragg has had his sights on Trump and his family, businesses, his foundation for years now. Prior to becoming the Manhattan DA, he was the chief deputy attorney general in the New York AG's office. And in that role, he spearheaded a lot of high-profile work going after the Trump family, including sort of leading the lawsuit that led to the Trump Foundation getting shut down in New York. He's been really open and quite frankly, boastful about how aggressive he's been in going after Trump and the Trump Organization. He secured a guilty plea, for example, from Alan Weisselberg, who was the Trump Organization's previous accountant, and he has really gone after the tax issues around the Trump Organization. But it just creates this really uncomfortable divide between how lenient Alvin Bragg and his office have been against even violent crime and repeat criminals, career criminals, if you will, and then how aggressive he's been by contrast in going after the Trump family. It's an uncomfortable look and sort of feeds this perception that Alvin Bragg is a really highly partisan actor and not a credible law enforcement officer.
If in fact, Sarah, we do get an indictment against Donald Trump, and I don't know if Alvin Bragg can turn back on this one now, but if an indictment comes down, how are Democrats going to react to him? Some have been critical of him, but will they praise him as a hero for doing this?
I think that he will potentially find himself with fewer allies among Democrats than he might have initially anticipated, because there has been, like you mentioned, a sort of lukewarm reaction to the fact that an indictment is coming. We don't know what that might be based on or how strong the evidence is, but based on the reports that are circulating right now, it seems like a case that prosecutors looked at years ago and determined that there was not a strong enough case that could reasonably be expected to hold up in a courtroom. And so, you know, there's a reason why this case languished for so long. There just wasn't enough there. And so barring some new smoking gun that Alvin Bragg's office has uncovered, it's really hard to see how someone who's so partisan, who's so controversial, could defend as weak a case as it appears right now, at least based on what we know.
On our Any Hour Newsmaker line right now, Sarah Westwood, investigative reporter at the Washington Examiner, introducing you to one Alvin Bragg. He'll be the prosecutor bringing charges against Donald Trump, which could come as early as tomorrow, according to the Daily Mail. All right, more coming up on the Rod Arkent Show in Utah's Talk Radio, 105.9 KNRS. Listen, and you'll know, okay, do you like to play in the mud? Do you like to play in the snow? Well, if you like to do just that, why not do it in a brand new truck from your Rocky Mountain Chevy dealer? It's Chevy truck season, so why not go big? Go bold, find new capability, and find new roads thanks to your Chevy truck. Now is the perfect time to step up with a strength and style in a new Chevy Silverado from your Rocky Mountain Chevy dealer. Now, the Silverado HD, it is the strongest, most capable Silverado HD ever to is ready to take on the toughest jobs that you've got this year. It comes in available in all trims. The Multiflex tailgate offers six different functions designed to help you load, unload, and access the cargo bed more easily. After a hard day of work or a full day of play, this heavy-duty truck offers an incredible, comfortable interior where you can just kick back and relax with your entire crew. The Silverado HD, they offer advanced towing technology to help you give you peace of mind when you're pulling a heavy load. If you want to find out more, just reach out to one of the 23 Rocky Mountain Chevy dealers up and down the Wasatch Front and around the entire state. And for more information, to find a dealer closest to you, all you do is
today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
The Rod Arkent Show on Utah's Talk Radio, 105.9 KNRS. Listen, and you'll know. Well, Governor Spencer Cox launched his tour of Utah. I guess he'll be going to all 29 counties over the next several months. Part of his re-election campaign. He announced he's running for election last week. Well, yesterday, he appeared before a auditorium of students at Tooele High School. He made an interesting observation, and I want to get your reaction to it coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. He said, Republicans are wrong about Democrats, and Democrats are wrong about Republicans. So if you're a Republican, and I think many of you are, or at least conservatives, what do you get wrong, or what do you think you get wrong about Democrats or progressives? And if you're a Democrat, what do you think you get wrong about Republicans or conservatives? We're going to talk to you about that coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, and we invite you to stay tuned. Republicans are wrong about Democrats, and Democrats are wrong about Republicans. So says Governor Spencer Cox. We'll get some of your reaction to that coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. By the way, some good news today. The state issued its, I think they're doing this now on a monthly basis, an update on the drought, and the Great Salt Lake has already up 2 feet, nearly 2 feet. And really, the spring runoff really hasn't started as of yet. I know the lake has got a long, long way to go, but that's pretty optimistic news that the state, the lake, Great Salt Lake, even before the runoff begins, already starting to see the levels rise. As a matter of fact, there was a story today. I guess Brighton, is it, here in the state of Utah, has now passed 700 inches of snow received this year. And I saw a note today in the, where is it, Lake Tahoe. They've had the snowy, this year has been the second snowiest in 77 years, and in one part of Lake Tahoe, one of the mountains there, they are registering 56.4 feet of snow with no end in sight. I just saw Chase Thomas on KUTV talking about this new storm that is coming in, already hitting California, will hit us late tomorrow and again on Thursday with more snow, more moisture, and expected it will continue into the weekend as well. Sooner or later, folks, sooner or later, it is going to dry out. but not any time soon. So just batten down the hatches and get ready. Make sure you got an umbrella and don't put away your snow shovel as of yet. All right, when we come back, we'll ask you this question. Republicans, what do they get wrong about Democrats and Democrats?
We'll give you a new furnace for just the cost to install it. For more information, call Any Hour Services or schedule online at anyhourservices.com.
All right, welcome back. Hour number two of the Rod Argento with you on this Tuesday. Don't forget, tomorrow it is Wednesday. That means it's Wingman Wednesday, and Greg Hughes gearing up to join us. He'll be with us for the entire 3 hours tomorrow as we try to do all we can to save your community, save the state of Utah, save the great nation of ours. If we have time, we'll try and save the world as well. That's coming up tomorrow on Wingman Wednesday. It all gets underway at 4 o'clock tomorrow. Now, still to come on the show tonight, we are going to be talking about a commencement speech coming up in Cedar City at Southern Utah University in a few weeks, in which Elder Jeffrey R. Holland, who is a member of the Quorum of 12 Apostles for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, will be the commencement speaker. After the university announced that last week, a petition was started to try and convince the university to uninvite Elder Holland. Well, we'll talk about that coming up in the 6 o'clock hour. Also, we'll talk with the mayor of Draper. Apparently, the ongoing debate over the expansion of a Geneva Steel gravel pit down there in that community has been settled, and we'll see what the mayor has to say about all of this. They are going to be allowed to expand, and we'll talk with the mayor about that as well. So a lot to come, but I wanted to spend some time with you on this one tonight because, you know, Spencer Cox does not like opinionated radio or opinionated television. He just doesn't. He'll tell people all the time to turn off CNN or turn off Fox News. And he probably doesn't listen to this radio station, which is fine with me. I don't care. But he's been on this effort to try and convince people that listening to, you know, the, quote, extremist media, I guess we'd be labeled an extremist media in his mind, that is what's dividing America. And if, in fact, there are more Americans in the middle who don't want to come back, fight each other, they want to get along and they want to accomplish things. Well, yesterday, the governor began his tour. Apparently, he is going to try and go to every county in the state in the coming year. It's the first stop in what he is calling, or his office is calling, the Connecting Utah Tour, where the governor will apparently spend the next calendar year and will stop in each of Utah's 29 counties to meet with students and residents. And he has described it as a looking to the future tour. Of course, he's running for re-election, so, you know, he can get away with this. Not part of a campaign right now. But his first stop was yesterday at Tooele High School. And the students asked him a variety of questions. And on the stage, apparently some question was asked of five students to sum up America in one word. Okay? One student said progressing. Another said amazing, which I agree with both of those. The others were critical, saying that America is broken, America is stressed, and America is divided. Now, apparently after the session, he told the Deseret News that was covering this story that he wasn't surprised at that. But then he talked about a number of things. But the thing I wanted to bring up with you is his thoughts on what is dividing America today. Here's what he said. He said, Republicans are wrong about Democrats, and Democrats are wrong about Republicans. And he said this. He said, why? Here's why. He said, because what we're doing now is we're only listening to the most extreme voices in those parties. So Republicans are only listening to the craziest Democrats, assuming that all Democrats are like that. Democrats are listening only to the craziest Republicans, assuming all Republicans are like that. When the differences between the average Democrat and the average Republican really isn't that big. Really? He said a majority, around 75 to 80% of Americans, don't want to see division, but they succumb to, quote, a very loud 10% on the side that loves to have us divided. He closed out his speech with a plea asking the students to be cautious when posting on social media. That's a big concern of his, and justifiably so. I would agree with him on that note. But I want to ask you tonight, because I think that raises a very interesting question. What do you find wrong, if you're a Republican, what do you think you're wrong about when it comes to Democrats? On the other side, if you are a Democrat, what do you think is wrong about a Republican? Okay? So the governor claimed that Republicans are wrong about Democrats and Democrats are wrong about Republicans. So how are we viewing the other side? And what do you think you're getting wrong? Because the governor claims we are. Governor claims that, you know, if you're a Republican, you aren't really understanding. You know, there's a lot more that you agree with Democrats on than probably what you disagree. But a lot of people on the Republican side and also on the Democrat side are listening to the extremes, the fringe of the Republican and the Democratic Party. And that's how we view the other party, because that's all we're paying attention to. So I want to ask you tonight. You know, now this is the governor. The governor, I told you, when the governor ran, he wanted to be, and is still today, I think, trying to be a different politician. Now, he has done some things of late where I think he's trying to shore up his conservative base, because conservatives, I think, have been, on average, I think, here in the state, very strong conservatives have been very upset with the governor on a number of issues since he became the governor, including the governor pronoun thing. We can go into that. We can go into many, many other things that upset conservatives. And I hear from them all the time. I hear from them on the show. I hear from them when I'm out and about, that they're disappointed in Spencer Cox as governor of the state. They want a strong leader, and they don't think he is. Now, over the past several weeks, he has, I think, tried to shore up his conservative base. He's been supportive of most of the legislation led by conservatives coming out of the state legislature this year. One of the things he was supportive of was school choice. And there are other issues as well. So if you look at all of this, what do you think the governor is saying here when he says Republicans are wrong about Democrats and Democrats are wrong about Republicans? If you're a Republican, what do you think you're getting wrong about Democrats? And if you're a Democrat, I'm not sure how many listen to this show, I'll be honest, or even this station. But if you're a Democrat, what do you think you get wrong about Republicans? 888-570-8010, 888-570-8010, or on your cell phone, dial #250 and say, hey, Rod, let's go to the phones, and let's begin with Steve in Salt Lake City, listening in on the Rod Arquette Show today. Steve, how are you? Thanks for joining us.
I'm good, thank you.
What are your thoughts on that? Republicans are wrong about Democrats, and Democrats are wrong about Republicans. What are we wrong about?
Well, here's what I think, Rod. I think you're missing the whole point.
Okay.
The governor was saying that a majority of the people don't believe that. It's only a small percentage. And I think personally that the reason there's so much division is because we're focusing on what you just keep saying. What's wrong with Democrats and what's wrong with Republicans? I think that just feeds all of this fire, and it's crazy that high school kids, where are they getting it from? They're getting it from the media too, I think.
So
high school kids, go ahead,
finish your thought.
I think they're being, the kids that are saying that the country's so messed up are probably just hearing that from their parents.
And that's why they feel that way. So, how do you change the narrative or the conversation then, Steve? What do you think needs to be done?
I think the media needs to change that narrative and stop focusing on what you just said. what's wrong with Republicans, what's wrong with Democrats. We ought to start thinking about what's right for the country and stop just fighting about it.
All right, Steve, appreciate your opinion. 888-570-8010, 888-570-8010, or on your cell phone, dial #250 and say, hey, Rod, let's go back to the phones and talk with Randy, who's on I-15 tonight. Hi, Randy, how are you? Welcome to the Rod Arquette Show.
Hey, thanks, Rod, for taking my call. So I agree with the last caller. I think the media is the divisive tool here, and they do it for ratings and whatnot. But I think one of the mistakes that they make is they try to portray Republicans as those that want to destroy the environment, which is just wrong. That's not true. I'm a conservative, and I love the environment. I do everything I can to be mindful of our environment and our earth. So that's one of the mistakes I think that the Democrats project about the Republicans. And I think the Republicans project the fact that Democrats don't care about energy independence, and I wouldn't say that's true at all. I would say it's those in high places that are ruining our energy and independence. I think everybody would like to be a energy independent, you know, Democrat or Republican. So those are just two areas, I think.
All right, Randy, good points. I appreciate you calling in. All right, more of your calls coming up. A lot of people want to weigh in on this. If you're just joining us now, the governor is on his Connecting to Utah tour. His first stop was in Tooele High School yesterday. He asked some kids there about their thoughts on America. A couple of them said progressing, said the country was amazing. But three others said it is broken, it is stressed, and it is divided. And then the governor talked about the division in the country. And he brought up a point, and he raised a question about he thinks Republicans, you know, people should think about this, that Republicans are wrong about Democrats. You know, if they really looked at Democrats and what they're trying to do, they would think they aren't such a bad party, such a bad group of people, and vice versa. If Democrats looked at Republicans and what we're trying to do, they would realize we aren't as bad as they seem to think we are. And he blames it on the extremists. Maybe people listening to this show, maybe this show itself. More of your calls and comments coming up. 888-570-8010, 888-570-8010, or on your cell phone, just dial #250 and say, hey, Rod. Can I take a minute and talk to you about right now what happens to your home when the power goes out? I can tell you what happens in our home. We scramble for the flashlights and light the candles and sit and wait and wait and wait until the power comes back on. That's probably happened to a lot of you up and down the Wasatch Front this year simply because of the winter weather that we've had. How would you like to correct the problem and be ready for whatever the power and the weather does to you in your home? Why not take a look? And look at a brand new Generac automatic standby generator, and you can purchase one today from the Generator Supercenter. The Generator Supercenter is the nation's number one Generac generator dealer. No more worrying or waiting for the power to come back on. Give yourself peace of mind by calling now for a free estimate. When the power goes out, the Generac generator can have your home back up and running in a matter of seconds. It's pretty amazing as to what these do. No hassle installation. Low financing options are available. So find out more today by calling the Generator Supercenter for a free estimate. 801-882-9222, 801-882-9222.
To minister to you.
Listen to meditative prayers on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rod Arquette Show on Utah's Talk Radio, 105.9 KNRS. Listen, and you'll know, great to be with you on this Tuesday. The governor was out at Tooele High School yesterday talking about on his, quote, Connecting Utah tour. And he talked about the differences that exist in this country today and speaking to the students. And he said the differences between the average Democrat and the average Republican really aren't that big. And he pointed out that he thinks Republicans are wrong about Democrats and Democrats are wrong about Republicans. Why? He says because both listen to the extremists in their parties and not pay attention to what most people think. So I'm asking you tonight, what do you, if you're a Republican, what do you get wrong about Democrats? And if you're a Democrat, what do you get wrong about Republicans? 888-570-8010 or on your cell phone, dial #250 and say, hey, Rod, Robert, or Bob, I'm sorry, is in West Jordan tonight here on the Rod Arquette Show. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Rod.
say I think the governor is really trying to score points in what he's saying. However, I do think that he has a point in a sense. For example, we tend to view Democrats by their leadership.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I know many Democrats who are good conservative people. However, I do believe that they are duped and used by the Democrat Party. And if they really understood what the Democrat Party stands for, they wouldn't want to have any part of it. And then I do think that Republicans in general, at least the ones who speak out, are better informed than the Democrats.
Yeah.
Because we see what the Democrat Party is doing. We see that they are trying to destroy our liberties. We see that they are openly trying to destroy our Constitution. They openly talk about socialism. And so we understand what's happening in our country. But I think many Democrat voters don't see it that way. Democrat Party is very successful. The Democrat Party is very successful in convincing their constituency that Republicans don't care about other people. They don't care about the environment. They're racist. They want to destroy Medicare and Social Security. And so in that way, yeah, we are misunderstood.
All right, good point.
It's just a matter of education.
Yeah,
and good I think the most important thing today is that principles of freedom are not taught in the schools. Basic government is taught, but not principles of freedom. Children graduate high school, and they do not understand the Constitution.
Boy, amen to that, Bob. And I wish more focus was put on that in this country today, because I think what the governor saw, maybe at Tooele High School yesterday, where our kids are hearing their parents talk about certain issues and divisiveness within the country, but they aren't finding out about it in the classroom. And, you know, talk about division in this country. Go back to the Civil War. You want to talk about division? There you have division. Brother, cousins killing each other over the issue of slavery back in the Civil War. That's division. The division we have today, I think a lot of people don't really understand the issues. And Bob brought up a very good point that, you know, the Democrats, the leadership of the Democratic Party, I wouldn't even call it the Democratic Party anymore. I'd almost call it the Social Democratic Party or the Democratic Social Party, because that's what it has become. But does the average Democrat out there agree with everything their party leaders say? Back to the phones we go. Let's talk with Robert in Utah County tonight. Robert, how are you? Welcome to the Rod Arquette Show.
Thanks, Rod. You know, I understand the governor's sentiment, and I can appreciate his desire to bring people together and try to close some of these gaps. The problem is his logic is fundamentally flawed. We have an electorate system that allows for primary votes.
Mm-hmm.
And in that primary vote, you get the voice, theoretically, you get the voice of the average party member, whichever side you want to place that on, which means the people being elected should be representative of the majority by definition.
Mm-hmm.
And now look at the leadership. So now you look at the leadership. Now, do you say, okay, on the national scale, does the average party member, the average Democrat congressperson, do they represent the extremists? Yes, they do. Look who they vote for their leadership when they are put on the spot and they have to vote. So either the leadership does reflect the average neighbor of mine who thinks differently than I do, or the governor's admitting there is a flawed problem somewhere in the system and it's corrupted. But he can't have it both ways.
Yeah.
We either primary elect them and they represent us, or he's saying they don't represent us. But you got to choose.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very good point. All right, Robert.
Six. That's 877-488-4456 or online at safemoneycounselor.com.
One man, one goal. Yeah, one vision.
The Rod Arquette Show on Talk Radio 105.9 KNRS.
Joe Biden signed his first veto yesterday, and it has to deal with your retirement plans and ESG. We'll get into that in the coming hour, along with the debate over Elder Jeffrey R. Holland's commencement address down at Southern Utah University in April, and the debate going on there, and should he be barred from speaking at the university. We'll get into that as well. All right. Right now, we're just talking to you tonight as you work your way home about some comments the governor made during his Connecting Utah tour at Tooele High School yesterday. He pointed out that, you know, there's not a whole lot of difference between the average Democrat and the average Republican. The divide isn't that big. And he said Republicans are wrong about Democrats and Democrats are wrong about Republicans. Why, he says? Well, it's because people in both parties listen to the extremes and don't pay any attention to the middle. So what say you? Do Republicans, what do Republicans get wrong about Democrats? And what do Democrats get wrong about Republicans? Back to the phones we go. Let's talk with Alan, who's been waiting patiently in Syracuse tonight. Hi, Alan. How are you?
I'm doing great, Rod. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Your thoughts on this, Alan?
Well, I agreed with a lot of things that you and your caller, I think his name was Bob, talked about that. You know, I think the American public has been so inundated with propaganda that the true history and the true facts are rarely seen, and not a lot of the public is that educated. But on what's really going on, but I actually believe that the premise of the governor's assessment is incorrect. I don't think it's a matter as much of Republican versus Democrat as it is a ruling elite establishment versus we the people. I think that the Democrats in a lot of ways are more easily identified with some of their extremist leaders and the propaganda that they spew. But I think on the Republican side, there's some even more sinister folks lurking, the Mitch McConnells and the Mitt Romneys, and even to a degree the Spencer Coxes, that, like you say, when it gets close to election time, they pretend to be on our side and espousing conservative values. But when the heavy hand of government needs to be laid on the people, they're not above doing it and making their agreements behind closed doors. And I think it's much more of a matter of a grassroots feeling from the people that they're just not being represented by either party, and the divisions are coming from parties with the people versus the ruling elites.
So let me ask you, Alan, if that's true, so it's really not party versus party, it's establishment versus the people. Do the people have a chance nowadays?
I agree.
Do we have a chance against the establishment?
You know, I like to think that in the end, you know, that truth wins and that the people will overcome this. But I think there has to be a huge house cleaning, and I think it's going to take outsiders and people that can't be bought and can't be intimidated. And whether you like him or not, people like Donald Trump that are in a position where they can't be bought and they can't be intimidated, because if we're just going to go back and install these people that are being put before us, and if the election system isn't cleaned up to where our vote is actually really being counted honestly and correctly, I don't know that we do have a chance.
Yeah. Do you feel that Donald Trump, maybe the first candidate in a long time, represented the people?
He's the first one in my lifetime
since
probably Ronald Reagan.
Okay, all right.
And, you know, I think maybe even as weird as it sounds, I think JFK maybe tried to, and I think maybe the establishment now as well. I think it's been going on for a lot longer than than many of us even realize that we've been propagandized as much as any people in this world.
Yeah. All right, Alan, thank you. I need to get some other calls in. Let's go to Susan, who's in Logan tonight here on the Rod Arquette Show. Hi, Susan. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for taking my call. I agree with everything Alan said. I mean, he is right, and that's why Donald Trump came to power. But I also want to say something, too. I think the difference, too, is that I heard Greg Gutfeld mention this a while ago, that another difference is when Democrats are taught to hate Republicans. I mean, when we're called Nazis constantly, especially when the president of the United States and you've got all these bigwigs in the Democrats, I mean, they're taught to hate us. So Democrats hate Republicans, but Republicans basically disagree with Democrats and with what they believe in. So I think that's a big difference, too. I mean, when they think we're Nazis, literally the low information voter, they literally think that Republicans are Nazis. I think a lot of them that don't listen to it really think that we are evil people. You know, the ones that don't know us, they think we are really evil people because that's all they hear on the mainstream media and everything is that we are really bad people. And so sometimes I think that's a big divide, too, that they call because they don't, people that don't know Republicans, that's what they think. They think we are evil people, probably the devil, because that's what they hear, you know, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and all those people telling us, too. They think we are evil people.
So you
and
think,
so, you know, I don't know how you can change that either, too.
Yeah. So, Susan, you think that Democrats are taught to hate the GOP and Republicans?
Well, they are. Listen to Joe Biden. Listen to that speech he gave. You know, what are they always talking about? MAGA are horrible people.
Yep.
You know, I think in some corners they are. And the people that don't listen to other things, and that's all they hear on MSNBC and all these other things, you know, what would you think? You know, if that's constantly what you're fed, that we are horrible people, especially MAGA, you know, they probably think that.
Yeah.
A lot of them, I'm sure, do think we're horrible people. You know, and I think on the flip side, a lot of Republicans, we just think they're wrong and we don't like their policies. But I don't think we hate Democrats.
All right, Susan, thank you. All right, more of your calls on this. 888-570-8010, 888-570-8010, or on your cell phone, all you do is have to dial #250 and say, hey, Rod. Let me take a minute to talk about one of our sponsors on the show tonight. I'm talking about Aspire Surgical Center. You know, the surgeons at Aspire Surgical provide an array of oral, maxillofacial, and cosmetic treatments to help you achieve the smile and the overall appearance that you've always wanted. People who have issues with the jaw, you know, they begin with dentists who will often recommend braces. Now, if the braces don't work, people will go see an orthodontist, or they will go see the oral surgeon. Well, the service at Aspire Surgical Center meets the highest standards in a calm, comfortable environment, and they're upfront about the treatment that they will provide to you. They specialize in wisdom teeth extraction and implant, oral maxillofacial surgeons. They're on their way to go. They go out of their way, I should say, when it comes to implants because their expertise will ensure the implants work correctly and you'll get the look that you want. Now, they have 7 offices to serve you. Call or check in with Aspire Surgical today. I want to give you their website. Go to this and find out what they can do for you. try.aspiresurgical.net.
That's 877-488-4456 or online at safemoneycounselor.com.
The Rod Arquette Show with you on this Tuesday. Don't forget Wingman Wednesday with Citizen Greg Hughes. He'll join me for the entire show tomorrow. Gets underway at 4 o'clock. Republicans are wrong about Democrats, and Democrats are wrong about Republicans. If they quit listening to the extremes in their party, they would find that they have more in common with each other than they realize. That was a message that the governor delivered to students at Tooele High School yesterday as part of his Connecting Utah tour. Do you agree with the governor? Do Republicans, do they get things wrong about the Democrats? And do Democrats, are they wrong about Republicans? Let's go back to the phones and hear what Phil in Salt Lake City has to say on this tonight. Phil, how are you? Welcome to the Rod Arquette Show.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Just one brief comment. I don't doubt that there are a lot of Democrats who are middle of the road, don't like a lot of what's going on with what Joe Biden and the Democrats in Washington are doing. But the trouble is that when Election Day comes, they vote them back in. And so that, to me, makes every person who votes for these people complicit in all the things that they're doing wrong, even if they don't believe in all of them, that they keep voting them back in. And that's really my comment.
Could you say, wait a minute, before you go, Phil, could you say the same thing about Republicans, that those on the extreme are voted back in again and again by Republicans? Could the same thing be said about the Republicans?
Well, that may be, but I don't believe there are as many extreme Republicans as there are extreme Democrats. The Republicans don't buy into the Green New Deal. They don't buy into abortion. They don't buy into expanding the Supreme Court. They don't buy into making D.C. a state or Puerto Rico a state. And so, to me, all the extremism is on the left.
All right, Phil. And they don't buy into the other issues that the Democrats bring up. I think Phil makes a very good point. We had a caller earlier, I think his name was Alan, talking about what it's not so much about party as it is about the establishment versus the people. I mean, Washington, D.C., if you go there and spend any time there, and I don't go there very often, but I get a sense, and maybe those of you who travel there and work in Washington, it's kind of like a different country. Is that fair to say? I mean, they are so wrapped up in policy, so wrapped up in bureaucracy, so wrapped up in the federal government telling the American people what they can and cannot do. It's pretty amazing. And they are willing. The one thing that those on the left are willing to do is throw out some of the craziest ideas, like banning gas stoves. And now everybody's talking about it. And watch new policies coming out about gas stoves as well. Let's go to Andrea, who's in Hooper tonight, here on the Rod Arquette Show. Andrea, how are you? Thanks for joining us.
Great, Rod. Thank you. I just wanted to point out what Elon Musk said not too long ago about the differences between the parties now and what they are, say 40 years ago. The Republican Party has basically not moved to the right. We still espouse the same beliefs in God and country, mm-hmm. balanced budgets, mm-hmm. Requiring people to come here legally, not wanting to ruin our energy industry by adopting green energy policies too quickly before we have anything to replace fossil fuels. I mean, the list goes on and on. And these are Republican long-time held values. So the Republican Party has not really moved from those values, but at the same time, the Democrat Party, which used to espouse some of those same values, like standing up for the little guy, the Democrat Party has moved quite far to the left. I mean, they endorse all kinds of extreme views now. They can't even tell us what a woman is. And these are are very different from the values that were prominent when, say, John F. Kennedy was president.
Yeah.
If Kennedy were alive today, he would be a Republican.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it in my mind. So it's. I think the governor's premise is wrong to start with.
All right, Andrea, thank you very much. And you make a very good point. My father was a Democrat. I mean, my father was a Harry Truman, John F. Kennedy Democrat. And I don't think he would recognize the Democratic Party today. It has changed. And Andrea just said, the Democratic Party was always known as the party of the little guy. They represented working class Americans. And now the Republicans have that image a lot more than the Democrats do. The Democrats represent a group of Americans who are socialists, who think they want all the power concentrated in Washington that they can tell us to do. So there is a change in the party makeup. And he may be, maybe you're right. Maybe the governor was off.
Services, and we'll snake any line for just $29. Google Any Hour Services or schedule online at anyhourservices.com.
Hour number three of the Rod Arquette with you, Rod Arquette Show with you on this Tuesday. Can you believe the moisture we continue to get? And I watched Sterling's, 7-day forecast on KUTV tonight, and here he is talking about more rain and more snow on the way. Right into the weekend, crying out loud. We are into spring, by the way. It was first day of spring was yesterday. All right, Senator Joe Manchin is slamming Joe Biden's radical policy agenda after the president yesterday announced that he was going to veto a bipartisan congressional resolution nullifying the administration's environmental, social, and corporate governance, otherwise known as ESG. Manchin, who is widely considered the most conservative Democrat in the Senate, said the ESG rule prioritizes politics over getting the best financial return for millions of American retirement and investment. It derails bipartisan legislation. So what does this mean for your investment? And what actually has the president done? Joining us on our Newsmaker line to talk more about that, he's from the Heartland Institute and the Center on Climate and Environmental Policy, where he is the director. Sterling Burnett is joining us tonight. Sterling, how are you? Welcome to the Rod Arquette Show.
Good to be on. Thanks for having me.
How much of an impact is the Biden veto going to have on investors, do you think?
Well, you know, it's the regulation that Biden upheld by issuing this veto is one of a number of regulations his administration is imposing across different agencies that basically allow pension fund managers and advisors and banks and things to use your money to adopt progressive social and environmental goals. So basically, under federal law, before this regulation has changed it, pension fund managers were obligated, they were fiduciaries, to try and avoid great losses and to maximize returns for investors, which is critical. You know, if no one I know of can really survive well on Social Security alone. You want your investments. And previously, at least, the managers had to manage it solely, not a little bit, solely to maximize your returns and minimize your losses. Now the Biden administration's Department of Labor issued a rule that says, no, you can take other things into consideration, like ESG scores, which are subjective social considerations. So does a company have the right racial makeup? Does it take climate change seriously? Is it reducing carbon dioxide emissions? These may have nothing whatsoever to do with the profitability of the company. And so you're being allowed to forego your fiduciary duty to promote social goals.
Well,
and not even consistent social goals.
Yeah, but Sterling, from what I understand, aren't fiduciaries licensed to put the investor first and get the best return they possibly can? So is this new policy that the Biden administration is imposing on people, does that eliminate that theory of you've got to get the best you can get for your client?
Yeah, basically it says that that no longer counts. I mean, that was the law. And what this says is, well, yeah, you still should be making money for your clients. But if you want to take, because it doesn't mandate that you adopt ESG goals, it just says you're allowed to. So if your client then comes to you and says, hold it, you're reducing my return on investment, I'm going to sue you, he can just point to the regulation and say, well, they said I could.
What?
You know, the government said it's okay if I take your money and play with it to promote goals that I, you know, social goals that I think are important.
What recourse would an investor have then, Sterling, if he found out that the fiduciary was investing in areas that provided him a very low return? He was not happy about this. What recourse does an investor have?
It's not clear to me that he'll have any, especially if he's part of a public pension fund where he's just one of many people where the funds are pooled, and he has no way to pull his money out of that fund because it's part of his you know, employment. That's where you go. So it's not clear to me he has any recourse, and that's what Congress did. Is they said, hold it, we're going to uphold the sanctity of the fiduciary duty. Now, even before this new regulation passed, the truth is, if it was believed that climate issues or some other social issue might affect the bottom line of a company that you could be investing in, they could take it into account because that's financial. It was making decisions based on finances, not social goals. This says now you can do it based on social goals. And so it's not clear to me that the average investor, especially a public pension fund employee, you know, a school fund, a police union fund, it's not clear to me they have any recourse whatsoever, you know, other than the ballot box maybe. because Biden vetoed it, and they're not going to be able to override it. And we know it will have an effect on the economy because Congress couldn't have used the Congressional Review Act to overturn it if it didn't have at least a $100 million effect on the economy, because that's the threshold it sets.
Sterling, what is the motivation of the administration to do this? Are they simply trying to pump more money into green energy, knowing that it really hasn't turned a profit as of yet? Because I understand the returns on ESG investments are much lower than returns on your typical investments.
I'm not overly concerned. I'm not overly sure that they are really concerned about pumping up green investments. I think that they have a vision of the way the world ought to be, and they want to use your money to make it that way, even if it doesn't return as much profit. Remember, a lot of people on Biden's team are people who, before they joined the administration, were people who were saying, we need to aim for zero growth. We need to have negative growth because we're impacting the earth. So they don't care whether you're doing well. They're more concerned about equity, however you want to define that, environmental justice, however you want to define that, all sorts of other goals, LGBTQT
rights,
issue, right? You know, all sorts of issues. Do you believe in gun control? Well, if you're a gun, you know, if you're a gun manufacturer or a small gun shop or even a gun repair shop, right? Sorry, we don't want to do business and bank with you and allow you to do banking. These are what they're going after, is average people. They want to use your money to attack causes, to attack things they don't like, and promote causes that you may or may not like. I mean, if you're happy with all this, like I said, they already were allowed to do this if it was in your financial interest. This says it doesn't have to be in your financial interest anymore and could be contrary to your financial interest.
Well, and the White House yesterday tweeted out in a video, and burned into the footage was this line: President Biden vetoes extreme MAGA limitations on retirement funds.
Yeah.
Really? There were MAGA limitations that were extreme? Really?
Yeah. Well, no, the limitations were fiduciaries have to uphold their fiduciary duty. Somehow that was a MAGA limitation, right? We had a law. It wasn't a MAGA law. It was a law that had been around for a long time that said, you have a job and you have a responsibility. If you're managing other people's money in public pension funds, you have to put their interests first. No other thing. And that's MAGA.
You talk about this impacts public pension funds. How about private pension funds? Are they impacted by this at all?
Yeah, they could be. It's not just public pension funds, because it's a Department of Labor rule. Basically, it says pension fund managers can put your money towards their social causes. And if it loses you money, or if your returns are diminished, you can't hold them accountable because the law, you know, the regulations allow it.
Is there any chance, Sterling, that this could be overridden? My thinking is probably not.
No, it'll take an election, because to override a veto of a CRA action, it takes the same 2/3 majority, and you know, they'd have to pick up quite a few Senate.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
They'd even have to pick up quite a few votes in the House, right? So it's got to pass, and you're not going to get that veto overridden. So it comes to the next election, and the next president could do what Trump did, because he did do it when the agencies underneath him. Remember, these are agency rules, and they're run a lot of times. You know, you have appointees, but you have lifetime staffers that have their goals and interests. And they're the ones that typically write these rules. And so under Trump, when a couple of agencies tried to write these rules and the leadership of them didn't know what was going on, he said, nope, you're not going to pass that. In fact, we're going to go the other way, and directed his heads to make sure you're protecting investors, make sure you're protecting the currency, make sure you're not messing with the Fed or the SEC. You will not pursue social, it could be conservative. You won't pursue social goals, whether they're conservative social goals or liberal or progressive social goals. You won't be pursuing that with other people's money. Play with your own money.
Yeah.
That's reversed.
So all we can hope for is a change in the White House to make this go away.
And you know, it's a change probably. You have to secure a larger majority in the House.
Yeah.
You have to probably secure the majority, a majority in the Senate, and you have to have a different president. But if not, you're not. In the meantime, they've got 2 years to play with your money, right?
Yeah.
Or a year and a half to play with your money.
Oh, joy, joy. Sterling, thank you. Appreciate your time tonight.
Take care. Thanks for having me on.
All right. From the Heartland Institute, he is the director of the Center on Climate and Environmental Policy, Sterling Burnett, talking about the fact that Joe Biden has vetoed and overturned ESG investments and what impact that is going to have on your investment portfolio. More of the Rod Arcetio coming up here on Utah's Talk Radio, 105.9 KNRS. Listen, and you'll know, I think I mentioned to you yesterday, I underwent several years ago now a life-changing experience. I'm talking about LASIK eye surgery. It really did change my life because for a number of years, I wore glasses or contacts. Well, if you're thinking about getting LASIK eye surgery but not sure where to go for that procedure, look no further than Hoops Vision. Dr. Hoops and his team, they've done over 150,000 laser eye surgeries since he opened his practice 23 years ago. That's more than anyone else here in the state of Utah. They have the latest, most precise lasers in the U.S. and a team of very experienced surgeons who are passionate about patient care. And only at Hoops do you know they offer what is called the Lifetime See Clearly Guarantee and Insurance Program. They have the best technology, the best patient care, and the best doctors. So why go anywhere else than Hoops Vision for your LASIK surgery? And this month, they have a great offer. Why not take advantage of the Find Your Happy LASIK Special and save $1,000 on LASIK or PRK? That's $500 off each eye. To start the journey, reach out to Hoops Vision today, 877-30-LASIK. All right, welcome back to the Rod Arcetio here on Utah's Talk Radio, 105.9 KNRS. Listen and you will know. I absolutely shook my head today when I saw this story. I didn't realize this was taking place. But apparently there were special listening sessions at Southern Utah University yesterday after the controversy erupted over the announced commencement speaker, who is Elder Jeffrey R. Holland of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Now, he has publicly spoken about protecting the faith's family values, and members of the school's gay community believe his words have targeted them. Apparently, dozens showed up at a listening session yesterday. It was hosted by the president of the university. Students on both sides voiced their concerns and expressed support for Holland speaking at the graduation. Joining us on our Newsmaker line to talk more about this is Jacob Hess, a contributor at the Deseret News. Jacob, how are you? Welcome to the Rod Arcetio Show.
Hi, Rod. Thanks for having me on.
Jacob, I can't believe this is happening at Southern Utah University and what is taking place there. What is your reaction to it?
Well, I'm probably as shocked as you are. This same thing is happening at campuses all across the country. And in fairness, they are really sensitive personal questions when you talk about identity, right? But for thousands of years, human beings have disagreed about identity and love, and they've still found a way to live together. And I think we're forgetting that we can have different ideas about love, about marriage, about identity, and not pick up our pitchforks and ride somebody out of town. Especially not someone who has expressed so much love. I mean, it's really hard to make Elder Holland into a hateful person. That's how some of these students are acting.
Yeah, it amazes me too, because I've listened to his general conference talks over the year. He is one of the most caring individuals that I have ever heard speak. And he speaks from the heart. And that's why I was surprised when I saw that a petition was underway to cancel his appearance at the university. I mean, it's pretty amazing, Jacob.
Yeah. I mean, between me and you, there's kind of a new religion afoot on some campuses. And instead of iniquity, which is what Christians and Jews and Muslims are focused on,
this new religion focuses on inequity and any perceived unfairness. And the solution to inequity is to confront any source of inequity. So many of these students feel like they're improving the world, that this is the way to do it. You find any source of inequity. In fact, I was hanging out with some of these students at the University of Utah a couple years ago, and they were bragging about confronting instances of slight, what they perceived as racism and sexism. And you know what I told them, Rod? I said, if I went home tonight and told my wife I was going to try to improve our marriage by confronting any slight instance of unfairness in our home, how do you think that would go? And pretty soon they were like, yeah. You know what I mean?
I would strongly urge you, Jacob, do not do that, by the way. I don't think that would be a very wise move. Jacob, why are students on college campuses, and like at Southern Utah, like we had out at Stanford a couple of days ago, where we had a federal judge speak and was basically booed off campus, what are they so afraid of?
Well, you know, I interviewed John Haidt, who's one of the experts on this. He's at New York University. He said starting in 2014, he noticed something different on campus. He said, students have always been angry, but starting in 2014, they started to say that they were psychologically damaged by something their professor had said. This was brand new. He's like, where is this coming from? You know? And this becomes problematic with anyone that take strong positions. You on your show, you know, like you take a position.
Sure, sure.
You make an argument. And one of the problems is people are interpreting strong arguments that they disagree with as psychologically damaging. Like it wounds me that Elder Holland doesn't agree with my identity narrative, like how I see myself. You know how quickly that could silence you or any of us, right?
Yeah.
You know, it wounded me, Rod, what you said last half an hour, you know? I feel hurt. In fact, I was given a presentation once and somebody on the front row stood up and said, I'm a trans woman and what you said is very hurtful to me and painful. and this person acted like I should stop speaking, and I responded and I said, well, I'm sorry, but what I'm sharing is what I believe to be true.
Why did you feel you needed to apologize? I don't think you need to apologize. It is in your fiber to believe what you believe. So why should you apologize for the fiber that makes you you?
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't think I was meaning to apologize for what this person was claiming. You make a really good point. We need to stand firm and say, if a university becomes a place where this is happening, it's no longer seeking truth. John Haidt says you can either have a truth university or a social justice university. You can't have both. You're either pursuing truth or you're advancing a particular message. And so every university, you know, this article we wrote in the Deseret News, we're hoping that the administrators at Southern Utah University will just say, hey, no, we've got to stay strong, because research shows, last thing I'll say, is that if a university holds strong, and this is true of a media organization, if you hold strong and push back against this kind of bullying, then it happens less, just like with toddlers.
Yeah.
But if you give into it, you know what's going to happen. You just give into the tantrum, they're just going to keep doing it.
Yeah, they sure will. I want to ask you a final question, Jacob. If this continues at university campuses around the country, and we lose what I think a university education is all about, and that is simply the exchange of ideas. What's going to happen to this country if we can't exchange ideas?
Well, in a real way, Rod, it's already happened.
This is
the norm at universities, and it's actually been exported as students go on to graduate. They go to businesses. A couple years ago, we started to see this in businesses, right? Now, what are we seeing in elementary schools and churches? So, like, this is here, and it is a threat to the free exchange of ideas. I think the biggest consequence is that it becomes more difficult to seek truth, to find out what is true about anything.
Yeah.
But the good news is, folks like yourself in the media, brave folks at the university, we can stand up and say, no, we're not gonna do this. These are principles on which America was founded, and
I think the people that are concerned, by the way, liberals and conservatives are both concerned about this. I think they that be with us are more than they would be with them. We just have to, we have to rally and kind of push back against this.
And we sure do. All right, Jacob, great article today, and thank you for your time. Hope to talk to you again. Thank you, Jacob.
Yeah, thank you, Rod. Appreciate it.
All right, on our Newsmaker line, any hour Newsmaker line, that's Jacob Hess. He is a contributor at Deseret News, talking about the division at Southern Utah University over the commencement speaker who will be there in April, Elder Jeffrey R. Holland from The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. All right, more coming up on the Rod Arkent Show in Utah's Talk Radio, 105.9 KNRS. Listen, and you'll know, I saw this headline today, and it scared the daylights out of me. People will die. There's another supply chain crisis. Did you hear this story today? According to the American Society of Health System Pharmacists, shortages of critical drugs are the worst they've been in a decade due to quality control issues, selected plant closures, and other manufacturing woes, including a supply chain crisis. So what does that mean for you in an emergency if you need medicine that you just cannot get? That's why I want to talk to you about the Jace case from Jace Medical. The Jace case provides five life-saving antibiotics for emergency use. And all you do to get a Jace case is fill out a simple online form. In some cases, jump on a quick phone call with one of their board-certified physicians. And then, if approved, it will go to a local pharmacy and you'll have your medicine, your emergency medicine, sent you to the mail. So don't get caught unprepared. Everyone should be empowered to care for themselves and their loved ones during the unexpected, and that's where the Jace case comes in. Jace handles everything from online evaluation to a licensed pharmacy medication delivery and ongoing consultation and care. You want to find out?
Stop dreaming. Start driving. Visit Jerry Siner and experience the Siner difference.
Whoa! Give me back my freedom. Give me back.
Rod Arkent Show on Talk Radio 105.9 KNRS.
All right, welcome back to the final half hour of the Rod Arkent Show with you on this Tuesday. Don't forget, tomorrow being Wednesday, it will be Wingman Wednesday with Citizen Greg Hughes. Greg will join me for the entire 3 hours of the show tomorrow as we solve the problems in this community, in the state, in the country, and if we have time, around the world. That's coming up tomorrow from 4 to 7. Right here on Utah's Talk Radio, 105.9 KNRS. Listen and you'll know. Well, many of you drive by it each and every day. But now, the Division of Oil, Gas, and Mining here in the state of Utah has approved, has given preliminary approval to expansion of the Point of the Mountain. It gets tentative approval, and the big gravel pit there, I don't know what else you would call it, the mining there, but there are some people who are not very happy with all of this. Let's find out what the mayor of Draper has to say. Mayor Troy Walker is joining us on our Newsmaker line right now. Troy, how are you? Welcome back to the Rod Arkent Show.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back.
What do you make of this and this possible expansion? Because I don't think it's final as of yet. Is it, Troy?
No. This particular decision, we expected it, frankly. The Division of Oil, Gas, and Mining is a state agency, and they have a very narrow task, which is to, you know, if you meet all of their criteria, they have to approve your permit. So that's, you know, Geneva checked the boxes with respect to their, you know, their statutory little narrow window that they look at. And so they've given, now they're still subject, of course, to local zoning and land use authority.
Do they already own this property where they want to expand, Troy? Do they already own
the
property?
They do own it. They own all the property they want to expand on. They've purchased it, you know, at different increments in time. So they haven't always owned it, but they've bought different parcels and sort of combined them into one parcel. And that's, you know, that's one of the legal issues we have that we're fighting over.
Why do they say they need the expansion, Troy?
Well, you know, they need to expand so they can sell more sand and gravel and concrete. I mean, I think that's what it's about, right? That's what they do.
Yeah. How close is it to residential areas, and is that the biggest concern, Troy?
Yeah, that's probably, you know, one of the biggest concerns. There's a number of concerns. The proximity to residential and how it will affect someone's house that's right next to it. Number two, is the dust, is the factors of the dust, the air quality. Is that having an effect on people? That's another concern. And then how will it ultimately look when they're done? That's the other, probably those are the three big concerns. Now, if you look at their map and you look at the flight park, you know, it's a famous, probably the most famous flight park in the world for paragliding, parasailing. But, you know, if you look at, you know, if they got carte blanche, let's say they got everything they wanted, they could essentially take down most of the flight park mountain. They own it. They own the face of it, most of the face. So it'd be a significant thing if they were to get the ability to do everything they would probably like to do.
Troy, have you seen any studies on the impact on the air quality and the dust kicked up by this? How is it affecting residents? Has there been any studies looking at this?
Well, I know there are folks looking into it. I don't know of any specific that are specific to this, you know, operation. But from what I'm told, it's the largest scale gravel operation in proximity to a residential area in the state. So it's a unique situation. But again, this decision, you know, if they are able to, you know, circumvent local land use, it won't just affect Draper. It'll affect every gravel operation, you know, in the state that's mm-hmm. there. You know, mm-hmm. it'll have a far-reaching effect. And so, you know, we're not saying Geneva can't do their operations. We're just saying that there's a limit to it. And we think that our land use authority ought to be able to, through the public process, you know, determine what's a safe and appropriate limit.
Now, on the other side of I-15, you've got the state prison, and that site's being cleared out and will be developed over the years. Any concern about that development and the impact this expansion could have on that area?
Yeah, you know, that is something we, you know, I serve on the Point Board, as you know, and
yeah.
That's something we're interested in as well, because what will the companies and the businesses that we hope to bring to the Point, what will they think when they look out their window, you know, hopefully of a really tall, beautiful building, and they see a big gravel operation.
Yeah.
What will it mean? And so there's some of those kind of things. But, you know, it's interesting because the prison site, you know, is about 700 acres. Geneva's property just alone is almost double that if you look at the future of what it'll be when the gravel operation's over. So when you talk about that point in the mountain area, and old Citizen Hughes always called it Middle Earth. Now, I'm not sure he's ever read that book. You'll have to ask him if he's actually read the book, but he does like to call it Middle Earth, and it truly is because, you know, you've got us, Lehigh, you know, and, you know, all that future development. It's really going to be sort of the economic center, you know, going forward. So, you know, we've got to strike a good, fair balance that lets Geneva do its work and lets our citizens and everybody else, you know, have the quality of life they hope for, and that their homes are, you know, not going to be affected, you know, structurally, et cetera.
How about the impact, Troy, because I'll see them during the summer months, on the flight park and how that could affect that? I mean, could it possibly simply go away with this expansion?
Well, I've seen some wind studies that were done about the way they would want to take the ridges down that they own. You know, there's a ridge behind the ridge that's the main flight ridge. Yeah, it could totally disrupt the wind patterns. Now, you know, if it were to go to its extreme and they were to cut the V in the mountain, that would end the flight park. But, you know, I've never heard them say they want to do that. I hope that they're not that kind of corporate citizen. I don't think that they are. But there is certainly the potential for it to be, you know, change that whole area completely. I mean, it's actually changed a lot. You think about it, Rod, from when we were kids, that point of the mountain used to go out to a point.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't anymore. It doesn't. Yeah. It's not a point of the mountain anymore. It's around the mountain now.
Yeah, there's no more point at Point of the Mountain. You make a very good point. Troy, in listening to you, it sounds like there could be compromise here. Do you think there is?
I hope there's a way we can, you know, make a good compromise, you know, as we go forward. Now, you know, keep in mind, you know, our job as elected officials represent our constituents, and, you know, we don't want to be bullied. We don't want to be pushed around. We want to represent our constituents the best we can. And, of course, there's competing interests, but, you know, to say that there isn't a way we can work it out, I think there's a way forward. I hope we can get there. It's one of the things, you know, we try to do, you know, is I think good leaders try to, you know, work out, compromise, and make things work. But, I mean, we're not going to give away the farm. You know, we're not going to lay down and say, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
You know, we want to do something something within reason.
Yeah. I am going to ask Citizen Hughes tomorrow about Middle Earth. My guess is, Troy, he doesn't even know what it is. That would be my guess.
Oh, he knows. I just don't think he's actually read the book, but he does like to reference it. So you ask him.
Now you're raising a question if he can read to begin with. I wonder about that sometimes, too.
No, he reads fine. It's just what he reads.
All right. So. Troy, it's always great having you on the show. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
All right. All right. On our Newsmaker line, that's the mayor of Draper, Troy Walker, talking about the gravel pit expansion there at Point of the Mountain. Many of you drive by it each and every day. All right. More coming up.
CVS, Walgreens, Target, Rite Aid, and online. Navage, NAV, AGE, Clean Nose, Healthy Life.
Final few minutes of the Rod Arquette Show with you on this Tuesday. The Jesse Kelly Show coming your way following our news update at the top of the hour. Can I ask you this? Whatever happened to this this idea of the United States of America? I see this story on the Blaze tonight. A university in Michigan has decided to host five separate identity-based graduation celebrations in addition to its regular commencement ceremonies to celebrate the school's supposed diverse identities and cultures. Grand Valley State University, which is located in Allendale, Michigan, just a few hours west of Grand Rapids, now offers a graduation celebration for students who identify as Asian, Black, Latino, Native American, or gay. So they'll have five different graduation ceremonies, and if you're Black, you'll have your own. If you're Asian, you'll have your own. I mean, whatever happened to the United States of America? And I bring that up because remember what has happened to Scott Adams. Scott Adams, of course, the creator of the Dilbert cartoon, and he talked about white people running away from Black people. And as a result of that, there were many newspapers, including, I think, the Deseret News here, that no longer carries his cartoons. Well, now comes author and woke activist Robin DiAngelo. Now, she has authored a lot of anti-racism self-help books, such as White Fragility and Nice Racism. Well, she made a controversial comment earlier this month during a webinar on diversity, equity, and inclusion. Listen what she told Black people to do.
And then I'm a big believer in affinity space and affinity work. And I think people of color need to get away from white people and have some community with each other. And I'll let that go and maybe see if anyone else wants to pick it up.
So Black people need to run away from white people and have their own community. Now, I really debated doing this story as we wrapped it. I was thinking about doing it later, but I said, or earlier, but I said, no, this, we're going to talk to the adults here. Because this story, you know, I love marketing slogans, okay? The most famous, I think, that comes to mind right away is what stays in Vegas, or what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, right? Well, apparently, there is a city about 100 miles north of the U.S. border in Canada. And it put together a brand new tourism slogan, okay? Now, the city that I'm talking about is Regina, Saskatchewan. Are you ready for this? They have now come up with a new slogan. And they're being they're having to apologize for sexualizing tourism. The ad reads, "Show us your Regina." Erie's in there just cracking up. The slogan appears also on a sweatshirt. It says, "Show us your Regina, the city that rhymes with fun." So, I know it, folks. You know, sometimes they just, you know, they make mistakes. And they have had to apologize for this. They spent thousands of dollars on a ad campaign. And why didn't somebody in one of those meetings just say, you know, we probably shouldn't do that? All right, that does it for us tonight. Head up, shoulders back. May God bless you and your family in this great country of ours. Wing.